only has it been the hottest summer I've experienced in a while, it's also been the most stressful because we are still looking for a place. And because of that, we've been to some pretty weird areas of London in the last couple of weeks.
Well, not weird areas, but I guess just like areas you wouldn't really go to because unless you lived there.
Like there's nothing there,
yeah.
Which is why you wouldn't go there.
Exactly.
Like yesterday we saw one in Muswell Hill.
Yeah, that was nice, but it was sort of like the other side of Muswell Hill, so it sort of took ages to still then get to Muswell Hill on a bus, or then further for a tube or something, just long.
And there was like a Brazilian couple in there, and they were like really overly nice. And it's not as if they're the owners of the apartment, they're just renting it. But they gave us like a full, thorough tour, and like were trying to like ask us if we wanted to sit down and like have drinks with them. It's a bit much.
I think they were swingers, mate.
You think they were swingers?
Yeah, I think they were swingers. I think that was like the code. Do you know what I mean? If we'd have been like, oh yeah, I'll sit down and have a drink.
That's so weird.
Even though I'm just here to view your flat and leave.
It was really strange. Like, why were they trying to sell it so hard?
I don't know. Maybe
it's they're been just on, tenants.
Maybe it's been on the market for a while or something.
But they're just tenants. It's not their problem. It's the landlord's problem.
I don't know. That's why I'm saying I think that it was more of like a code for something else.
You think they were trying to fuck us?
I think there's a possibility that...
Oh my God. Well, I didn't pick up on that kind of energy. I just maybe thought that we are like socially...
When a couple is friendly to you more than you're expecting...
No.
That's going to be like my number one assumption.
No, dude,
is
I think
that they're trying to fuck us.
I think that we're just Londoners and they're from Brazil. So we're used to people being unfriendly and they were just like normal people. And we assume that they're swingers because we're like socially like retarded.
Nah, I don't think so.
I think that that's what's going on. I think that it's probably normal where they're from to be like nice and like have good like etiquette when you invite people over. Even if it's just a random person who's coming over to drop by. But because we're like cold-hearted English people, it's like weird for us.
Well, it's the I don't know, the whole rest of the process doesn't fill you with that kind of atmosphere and vibe, does it?
No.
Of like, oh yes, let's be pleasant and like talk about this and sit down and have a cup of tea. Like it's more like, you need to move. We need to get someone in like next week or even actually really tomorrow. So can you move now? And then it's just like,
oh my God.
Pay the money now. If you want to even put an offer on this place, put the money down. Make sure your offer's over the asking price and then you'll be guaranteed to fucking have a look at it. It's just like, this is getting ridiculous.
The music from like Evangelion has been playing in our heads as we've like been marching down the streets of London. Like that music that plays when they're like,
the big Tom music.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
Like we're on a mission to fucking get a fucking apartment. So yeah, yesterday at Muswell Hill, the day before that, it was another one in Muswell Hill. I would like to stay in North London if we can.
Yeah, shock. That's why we've been looking at loads of places in North London.
I'm open to other areas of London, but I don't really want to go south of the river. And I know everybody is always like, oh, it's up and coming. South of the river.
That was a big
It's trendy
rift.
Now.
I've got like a mate that's kind
not
of like,
true.
He's like the only guy that's probably,
not, true.
Not the only guy, but he's like the guy that's kind of close to my age that's also into music in a cool way and is kind of like quite like, you know, trendy and whatever. And he lived in East London and like those kind of like warehouse places and stuff, like, you know, when he was our age and whatever. He's a few years older than us, I think. And he was like, yeah, man, fucking, like, you know, it's all coming up, that area, like Peckham and fucking... Deptford and like all of that area and stuff. It's all like up and coming. There's loads of young trendy people there with like stuff going on now, like, you know, it's different. I was I will entertain looking at a flat there then. And the entire time you're like, babe, I like lived there when I was younger and I'm telling you that is not a good area.
Yeah, like
to
I
go.
Lived in when I was like Thamesmead, because we lived in Southeast London right before we left to move to America. And like we lived in the nice part of like Thamesmead where they had just built new houses. But like the surrounding areas are really shit. And like I know people are saying, oh, it's up and coming. When I was a kid anyway, it's not like Like, south of the river is not the best.
That sounds like it's been up and coming for about 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. So. That's the whole thing. They keep trying to make it happen. Like, the Docklands and, like, Canary Wharf and stuff.
They should have got that. But then other than that, it's just like... trains to skip through some of that area then, shouldn't they? To sweep up some fucking commuters and shit.
I think like that...
the access to that area of London is just so shocking.
What we're realizing is that we've been so lucky since we graduated from uni, because, like... number one, the fact that we even got to go to uni in London and we survived is like a miracle, because we were students in like, and we had like no money in the most expensive city in the world, or one of them anyway. And now as adults or whatever, we've lived in some pretty nice areas. We've lucked out and we've been able to find apartments in good areas. We've not stepped outside of North or West London since we graduated.
Yeah.
So but now is, the reality is crashing down because the market's crazy, prices have gone up, and in all likelihood, we're going to end up
the reality
in
also
fucking
is
Croydon,
that, like,
dude, and you just need to embrace it, okay?
The other reality is that if you want to go and live in a quote unquote trendy place like Stoke Newington or fucking
I wouldn't
Dalston
mind Stokey.
Like,
Stokey's all right.
Yeah, of course, but then the apartments that are there are like shit. And they've not been fucking done up for like fucking years.
Yeah.
And they look really rough.
Yeah.
And then...
but it has like that kind of like Thatcher era 80s vibe.
They don't need to do it up because it's a fucking trendy area.
Yeah.
So they'll constantly have people trying to like go into those trendy areas. So they don't really have to fucking do them up or furnish them nicely or anything.
Mm.
And it's just, I don't want to live in a fucking ropey shitbox. I do want to have, like, a somewhat nice, you know, flat. And I think I'm not, like, you know, a minimum wage worker.
No,
I shouldn't
we're
have
not.
A ropey shitbox.
Yeah.
Like, I should have, like, an okay
decent
apartment.
Flat. But that's the thing, is it's annoying because, like, we've been sensible. Even though we've lucked out and we've been able to find really nice places in decent parts of London... so far, like, it's been luck because the market was always going to explode in this direction. Like, it was inevitably going to happen. And it was only a matter of time. But we have been sensible in terms of where we've gone. We've not, like, tried to trade area or quote-unquote the trendiness of an area for, like, the decentness of an apartment. Part of the reason we stayed in North London for so long is because... apartments are like reasonably priced in North London and decent, and it's like a chill area. It's not like, you know, it's just a nice place to live. But fuck it, mate. Peckham it is, or Croydon, or wherever
we're
the fuck we're gonna
end. We're gonna see a nice affordable pod in
East London.
In East London tomorrow.
Yeah. Whereabouts in East London are we going tomorrow?
Like Upton Park, sort of like Plaistow.
Around area. That, yeah. And then we've got an offer on one in Muswell Hill that I really hope goes through, but fuck knows, because like another 10 people have probably put an offer on that one because it was actually really sweet. And the one we saw today was in Deptford, and it was like in a really rough, like Thatcher looking 80s neighborhood. But the flat itself was actually really, really nice. But there's fuck all around, and like, it's like one of those situations where it's like...
they look that rough in the daytime, mate, at lunchtime.
Yeah.
Think how it's going to look in the winter.
Or are we just like super... like is it? Night. Are we just super sheltered? I'm sure a lot of Londoners who are listening to this is going to be like, oh my God, you're so sheltered. You're such a fucking sheltered... like, because like we've lived in North and West London. So as soon as we step like slightly out of like that area, we're like, oh my goodness.
This is terrible.
I don't think that's the case. I think that, like, the property market's just terrible right now.
Yeah, housing crisis has, like, reached crazy fucking extreme peak.
Yeah.
To the point where even, like, my parents were looking at a place that they wanted to get when they just moved and they missed out on a place. And they saw that it went on the market and sold for 200 grand more.
What?
A year later.
200 grand more a year later.
Yeah, that's what happened through the pandemic.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, and now there are all these like people that like have reached the point as well where they've like either saved money or they've inherited some money and they're like sitting, waiting in like a rented apartment or whatever, waiting for that like right one to come along. And yeah. then they're also bidding against another five yeah, or 10 people.
I know, it's just demonic. It's a demonic situation. Like even the apartment we saw, the one in Muswell Hill that like my heart has already kind of moved into mentally.
It's not good. Don't do that.
I know. I've done that like twice now and have been like disappointed to the point of tears when we didn't get the apartment because like the offer wasn't accepted because someone else got it or whatever. But this one in Muswell Hill, there's actually the lady who's currently there, the tenant, did the exact thing you're talking about. Like she is trying to buy a place but is competing in the renters market short term in order to basically have a competitive edge while she tries to buy something.
Yep.
It's just madness. It's fucking crazy, but hopefully we'll fucking find somewhere soon.
What's frustrating about it is that like you can see that lots of people are going through this constantly throughout the year. Yeah. It's not like there's peaks in the summer and like whatever. Yeah. I don't, or maybe you speak to a real estate agent, maybe they'll tell you otherwise. But like it feels like this is probably happening all year round constantly.
Yeah.
And probably just getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And at the moment you've got these fucking sham debates going on with like between these two people that like might be our next prime minister or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're all there talking about fucking taxes.
Yeah.
Instead of talking about anything that would propose as a solution to any of the major problems in the country, like the housing crisis.
Yeah, the
or
NHS
anything.
Is in crisis. Like everything is in crisis at the moment. But yeah, it was really funny that they tried to do like American style debates. Even though it's two Tories debating each other for a constituency of, what, 200,000?
It's disgusting.
Like...
And you know why they do those kinds of events, actually? I've just realised why. Because there's only 200,000 people in the Conservative Party that are members of the Conservative Party.
Yeah.
And they're all probably so fucking wealthy that they're not, like... in the UK or whatever anyway.
Yeah.
They've probably got... They're in their holiday homes or whatever. So they're like watching all the clips on YouTube to decide who they're going to put their fucking vote on.
Yeah. It's just fucking gross. And Rishi as well. Like, I remember, I think it was last year, there was that meme going around where people were calling him Dishy Rishi, implying that he's, like, attractive, which is just, like, not true.
By conservative politician standards... which are some of the lowest standards in the world when it comes to physical attractiveness. I think that he's doing pretty well.
But I mean, the fact that it would become a whole meme just because he doesn't look like
a troll
hideous.
Or a banker.
Yeah.
Or, somewhat like a fucking strict school mistress. Yeah. Like both fucking Theresa May, that's
like our things. That's our thing with our prime ministers in the UK. We have like goblins and trolls like Churchill and fucking Boris Johnson. I feel like they fit into the same category. Or we have strict school moms.
I think Tony Blair looks like a witch.
I think Cherie Blair, his wife, looks... She had a big mouth.
They both did.
They both had big faces and like big mouths.
I think
mouths.
They're both witches. So we have goblins, we have witches.
Was
a troll. Look at him.
Yeah,
we have goblins,
you have witches, you have strict like school moms. So Theresa May... that look like they have never had an orgasm, Margaret Thatcher. And we have like people who look like they manage a bank branch, like fucking...
I think that's Liz Truss's whole pitch, is that like, hey, she even wore the same like necklace and everyone was saying that she was cosplaying as Margaret Thatcher and stuff.
Oh my God.
In the debates. So she's angling for like a... I'm like a not as strict school teacher or headmistress, and
I'm
maybe
a fun headmistress.
Maybe I've had an orgasm,
like maybe just one,
just to conceive. But like that's her whole pitch.
Rishi is a POC though. He's a sexy Indian man.
He'll be our Obama.
He's a sexy Indian aristocrat, and he's got the same ears as Obama as well.
The sticky out ears.
Yeah, he's got the sticky out ears. But he tries to do the whole like Hugo Boss, like Bond thing, and it just doesn't work. He doesn't have enough charisma or sex appeal. And yeah, last week I was talking about how there was all this stuff like released from when he was in uni, and he was like, oh, I don't have any working class friends or whatever the fuck. Well, now he's trying to lean really into his like immigrant story. And yeah, for those of you who don't know anything about like the history of the UK, most of the people who are black or non-white or Asian or whatever the fuck who are here came from the colonies. And his family were like high caste, like Desi. I didn't know. They were like high caste, like aristocratic people who like were part of the colonial elite of their nation. And like basically tiptoed across the pond and settled and became part of the establishment here because they were like educated, class of educated professionals. So like he doesn't really have claim to that kind of like immigrant started from the bottom tale because it just isn't true. But he's like leaning really heavily into this like I'm a fucking immigrant thing. And I know this because as like a Nigerian immigrant, like my family also colonial elite. Educated professionals well, came here to be educated professionals.
I guess they're also in a sticky like, situation because, like,
yeah,
they can't really start going off and reeling on about new ideas and stuff, right?
No.
Because if they do that, then they're probably diverting enough away from the manifesto that Boris Johnson was elected in for. And then you've probably got calls for actually a general election.
It's just funny to see how the...
Although
Tories
I'd probably fancy
here.
Their fucking chances against Labour still but today.
It's also just funny to see how the Tories here have embraced identity politics in a way that the Conservatives in America, who are like supposedly their counterpart, but I don't actually think that that's true, but the Conservatives in America don't like sort of use... Well, they kind of do. I mean, they have like their mascots, I guess, but it's like the current ethos of the... Tory party is to like lean into this idea of like diversity and blah 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 and this and
nowadays,
that
because
they
maybe
know
more.
They know that it's beneficial to the sort of neoliberal system that they support, which is why.
Well, the same with women.
Yeah,
they've always had.
Yeah.
Arguably, probably more women in like
the Labour's never had a female
leader.
Yeah,
so like, they've
at
had,
this point, the Tories have had two.
Well, we've had two prime ministers.
Yeah, two
now.
Prime ministers, two so, Tory prime ministers who are women.
Potentially a third,
and potentially a fucking POC.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing. Like, the neoliberal order, like diversity. Or
what you're saying is, if Jeremy Corbyn was actually like
a POC,
a black woman. Then he would have been indestructible.
Well, not just that, the neoliberal order like uses diversity as like a moral cover. Cause like it's easy to have people overlook like class contradictions when people who come from historically oppressed or protected categories are in positions of power. And like the Tories in the UK have leaned into that a lot more nakedly than the Conservatives in America have. They're still sort of fighting the culture war. Whereas there's less culture war stuff here with the Tories. The Tories are like, we are like fiscally conservative, but they're very sort of vague on the social stuff, if you know what I mean. Because they know that they can weaponize it and use it to their advantage when need be. You know what I mean? And I guess the Republicans could, like you could say Caitlyn Jenner could run as a Republican candidate or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, and they've still got a pretty diverse cast in the Republican Party, right?
No, like, not... Really,
not
kind
maybe,
of.
Not maybe the places that matter, but like they got the Ben Carlsons, wasn't it? That guy who was
a
brain surgeon. Who
yeah, the
was,
guy. I remember that guy. He had like this weird alien Jesus picture on his wall. They look like Dr. Yacoub. It was like that Hotep meme. It was he had like a literal. He's in some kind of. I think he's like a Seventh Day Adventist or something like that. He has nutty.
And then they
beliefs.
Have a lot of like Latinx in.
Yeah,
in,
they
in
do.
The, like, is Ted,
there's a lot
is
of
Ted
like,
Cruz Latinx with
I
the last name
so.
Cruz? I'm gonna say there's got to be something going on.
There's
there.
There's got to be something.
And they got that other fella who looks like a robot who's doing the UAP, the UFO stuff. Marco Rubio.
Oh yeah, Marco Rubio.
He looks like he creeps me the fuck out, dude. His face looks like a badly generated sim face. It looks like it would be powered by like Facebook AI or something.
Oh
it,
my
he
goodness.
Looks really, really
they have
creepy.
DeSantis
Ted Cruz
now
looks a lot less creepy
well.
Now he has the beard.
I think he's sort of like chatted up a little
he's
bit.
He's found his like handsome streak with the beard.
He's peaking. He's peaking.
He's
I'm also proud of him
because he's like talking about fucking monetization and video games. And like everyone, it broke like the video game internet for the day. It was quite funny.
All the video game bros like coomed because
it
like,
was just quite. It's quite entertaining anyway. Like it's just to see someone that is like twice your age talk about all these things that you associate.
He's
as
not
being
that
very,
old. He's Gen
he's
X.
In his 50 something.
He's Gen
he?
X.
He's in his 50s.
He's
though.
Still Gen X.
That's still like twice my age, bro.
But Gen X is. I think that millennials like, forget just how much Gen X, like millennials and Zoomers, and it's debatable which category that me and Jake are in, okay?
Oh, God.
So I'm never going to let that horse die. It's debatable because I don't relate to millennials because they're like 40, okay? I'm not fucking 40. But Gen X has had a massive influence on millennials. They made all the stuff that we grew up loving and watching. To have some respect... You know, put some respect on Gen X's name. That's all I got to say. I think because you think, just because you think someone's 50, you think that's not old. You'll be 50 before you know
it.
It's
like twice as old as me.
Yeah, but it's not that old, dude.
Pretty old, bro.
And it means that they were young not too long ago. Like they like liked Nirvana.
Maybe. I can't imagine Ted Cruz liking Nirvana.
You never know, he might be like really into like Alice in Chains and like Smashing Pumpkins. He might be a cool guy underneath his like fucking political
well, he just
persona.
Revealed that he buys video game microtransactions, so he's the opposite,
of a cool guy. I'm sorry, I just like to imagine that people have hidden depths, you know. I'm just that kind of
I think that's what it is. It's like revealing that someone like Ted Cruz literally sits on his mobile in bed and like buys gems for a fucking game. It's like it's just
like
quite it's quite amusing
depth.
To think of that. Like
it is. He's having a great time. He's like fucking oiling his beard. It's looking luxurious. He's buying his gems. He's living his best life.
There was the other Republican senator, I think, or someone that like spent something ludicrous, like nearly $20,000 on Steam games.
What kind of Steam games? Like
just like everything, like Skyrim, Fallout, like everything, just like all the games that you would want to buy in a PC game library.
Well, yeah,
he just
how
like
old
bought
is
them
he?
With expenses. He
Don't
was
forget,
like,
Gen
yeah,
X
he was in his 30s
Gen X, yeah, Gen Xers, older millennials, like grew up playing video games. Like most older men probably play video games.
Pretty sure that was like the punchline of the piece was like, this is why you can't have youngsters be politicians because they spend their expenses on video games. He's just like, well, I mean, he's not doing us a favor.
Like once they start moving games consoles into nursing homes, then we know that our generation is aged. Because that's basically what it's going to be. Like, if in a nursing home for millennials, there'll be like a Wii, a Switch that people fight over.
I've seen these companies making VR pods and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And like what they've made one that's like a fucking VR masturbation pod. they want to put them in people's offices.
Like to go and come.
Yeah.
And then go back to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pods. People jerk off in their offices and stuff.
But I can't imagine
already.
Like seeing Gary come out of the pod,
the cum pod,
and then you're gonna like go in there, and it's probably the same like robot arm and like thing that
like
it's used to just jack Gary off is now just gonna be. it's like running a train on a robot, and like most people probably don't ever have to come up with a stark realization of like someone else's cock has been in that thing like 30 seconds ago.
Well, why
ago
do they want people
ago?
To give people hand relief at work?
I don't know. They were like
to relieve
it shows all these
stress.
Like, it shows all these societal benefits and all of these kinds of things to like have
all kinds of goofy shit these days that they're just throwing at the mental health crisis. The theme of this episode is the psychedelic revolution, which we'll get to. But I want to have more banter about these VR sex things or whatever. So wait, it's a pod.
Yeah.
And it's private. You go in.
Yeah, and it closes all the doors. Like one of those things at an arcade.
Like an
instead of it being motorized, or maybe it is motorized.
Like there was that
and it
time.
Gives you, maybe it is motorized and moves your butt in certain ways and stuff. But like, not like it's like rocking the whole thing around like you're in a spaceship.
No, but there was one
something.
Time where we went to that arcade, Four Quarters East or whatever, and they had the motorcycle game or whatever, and you sit on it and it like vibrates and like wiggles you around. Yeah. And I was like, you know, this is getting a bit testy for me.
Oh my
God. I had to get off of it. But like having a machine like that in the office for you to, is that what it's specifically designed for? To be in offices?
Yeah. They were like, we want to put these in offices for people to have masturbation breaks.
Oh my God. So like you work at like retail or fast food, which is like a demoralizing job. So you get coom breaks.
No, this was like office workers. And
oh,
stuff.
So like,
yeah,
not like Amazon workers or any like actual like office work.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you work for a magazine and there's all these people in the office and then like, oh, Jenna's just gone to the pod
to come
for 15 minutes. Yeah. Or whatever, or 10 minutes or 5 minutes.
How what good, kind of a
how
shameless
good the pod is, I don't know.
Like, what kind of a shameless human being would you have to be to like go in the cum pod knowing everyone knows that that's where you're going?
Yeah. And then you come back into
the office after
like,
you've come
with like blushed cheeks. Everyone's looking at you like, you have a nice time. Like, fuck that, bro.
Oh my God.
No way.
Also, like anytime I flick through like TikTok or social media or anything like that, like those Wish ads pop up with like dildos and stuff, but like dildos that are like keychains with multiple heads and nodules.
A Swiss Army dildo.
Yeah, like a Swiss Army dildo. And I'm like, what the fuck are women doing to themselves these days? And then like we went shopping this weekend. And we were on, where was it?
Oxford Street
or somewhere. Yeah. And we walked past that sex shop, Harmony. And like, there were floods of women going in and out, giggling, walking in and out. And I'm like, sex toys have evolved. And then even the way they look, they don't even make sense. They don't look like penises. They're no longer phallic. It's like, what are you supposed to do with this thing that looks like some kind of cup?
It should be like some sort of like Happy Trigger sketch where like you go in and pick up like a special delivery that's like a dildo that's a person sized. You're like carrying out this massive wrapper and like tie it onto the top of a cab when we're leaving with it.
But they don't even like, look like phallic or anything anymore. They look like
alien arms or alien
no,
fingers
just like
or something.
Weird things with nodules on them or yeah. Like weird cup shapes,
yeah,
weird suction thing.
You like, probably start using it and you're like, what, why is this knob there? And you're like, oh wow, that's why it's there. It's like, you know,
I mean, is like sexuality that divorced from like the body now to the point where even the sexual contraptions we use to pleasure ourselves no longer need to resemble the human form?
No, of course not. There's like, that's been going that way for years.
Like, I mean, when it came to like female sex toys, I think for most of history, they've been phallic. Now that's like no longer the case.
Well, they're still phallic.
They're not phallic. I've seen many that are no longer phallic.
Well, they're like eggs.
Or like bunny ears or like things that look like cups that have suction things. There's all kinds of different shapes, all kinds of nodules. They're like, they're so confusing. I'm like, I don't want to put that in my pussy, like that's weird. And like, I don't know, it, obviously vibrators can be fun like once in a while, but like it seems as if to go through those lengths means that it's like someone's primary sexuality and that's like how they're getting off the majority of the time, which is
sort of like come into the like defeat of like, oh yeah, this is just, it's probably better I just sort of rely like I can just go back and use this instead of like actually trying to sue someone or
It's sad and like the intricacy of the devices as well. It's like, is that, can that, how healthy can that be, how sanitary too, if you've got like an entire keychain of like different like dildos? Like
maybe it's good for the women's mental health.
Well, that's what they keep doing. They keep laundering all of this pathology through like mental health, which kind of like takes us into our next topic. Something that I'm incredibly like skeptical about. We watched the documentary on Netflix, a new one.
Well, we watched the first episode. We need to like watch the rest of it.
Oh yeah, sorry, really. I forgot that it's episodic. But yeah, we watched the first episode of this documentary about psychedelic therapy. And the scientist, what's his name again?
Michael Pollan.
Yeah, he's basically the narrator of the documentary, and he's a psychedelic research scientist and a huge proponent, probably the biggest advocate for psychedelic therapies at the moment. in terms of the quote unquote benefits that they can have, in terms of solving some of the existential and emotional issues people face currently. I'm incredibly skeptical of this notion, but regardless, it seems to be given a massive cultural push. Like right now in the UK, psychedelic therapy is becoming more prominent and accessible. There's a clinic.
Yeah.
And also, what is it? Imperial University has been doing a lot of studies and trials.
Yeah, Imperial College
London. Yeah.
Which is like a big medical university in England.
There's a huge push. There's a bunch of places in America as well that do psychedelic therapy. And there's been this huge cultural push recently with like celebrities like Megan Fox and all kinds of people talking about like psychedelics and like the quote unquote benefits of it in terms of mental health issues. And it's not just things like LSD, ketamine.
Well, ketamine's the primary thing that people are using for a lot of these clinical trials and psychoactive therapies or whatever. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I think even in the article we were reading, they kind of confess as well, like, ketamine is not, like, the best drug to do this with.
Yeah.
But it's what we can actually get away with doing legally at the moment.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what I find frustrating is like the especially within the documentary, is that Michael Pollan, especially like the way he describes his journey, parallels Timothy Leary in many ways. And in like the first like 30 minutes, he's like, oh, but he went off the rails, and you know, he was a crazy guy.
So you're saying he tried to discredit Timothy Leary immediately?
Yeah, and I think that
despite being inspired by him.
Not maybe inspired by him, because I don't think he was inspired by him at all, but I think like just to acknowledge the parallels in his own journey.
Yeah.
Of being like a psychologist and someone, or like, you know, in science for up to your 40s or 50s, and then finding the value in these drugs and wanting to pursue them for psychotherapy and all these sorts of things. Yeah. I think his book is even How to Change Your Mind.
Yeah.
Like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? And like, I find it quite mean and unfair that as soon as Timothy Leary is mentioned in any kinds of these conversations, he's constantly demonized. And I did listen to that other podcast that I think Abby Martin and like some and her boyfriend did, like exploring psychedelic culture and stuff.
Mm.
And the first episode, I think they were talking about Timothy Leary, and they played some clip where he was like, he just probably come back from fucking his mental journey, like escaping fucking, he went through like 26 countries and like got kicked out of all of them and shit. He was like in a bad place. They were very unkind and uncharitable to him in that as well. I just feel like he doesn't get a fucking good rap.
We know that you've been reading Timothy Leary's flashbacks recently. We'll get to Timothy Leary in a minute.
The fact is, like, the Michael Pollan, his like trajectory has parallels with Timothy Leary, and he like demonized him in the first episode, which I didn't like.
Yeah, but Timothy Leary isn't an uncontroversial figure, though.
No, of course.
Like, there's been rumors for years that he was an operative and that he was in bed with the CIA and all kinds of things like that.
Peshaw.
And there's a possibility that that could have been the case. But regardless, in terms of his contributions to the concept of psychedelic therapy and to the field of psychology in general,
absolutely,
it's undeniable.
And I think, and they don't talk about that stuff. They always talk, oh, he went too crazy and he did all this tune-in dropout shit and fucking.
But regardless, I think people are correct to be suspicious, because there are so many ethical and philosophical complications when it comes to something like psychedelic therapy, which was what got Timothy Leary in trouble in the first place. And those ethical quandaries, especially under a system like the one we currently have that's like profit driven and tends to try to throw market solutions at social problems, I think that there's all kinds of room for it to go wrong.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason why I'm incredibly skeptical about the fact that psychedelic therapy is now being touted. There's a documentary about it on Netflix. There are clinics opening up in places like the UK, which has had a historically incredibly draconian attitude towards drugs and drug culture.
But again, the way that you even described it was with markets and stuff is exactly even the angle that these people are opening this clinic up from.
Yeah.
Is that if you're an alcoholic and you do a week of rehab, that will cost you from like $4,000 to $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our ketamine therapy is 8 weeks and it's $7,500.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm also, I'm not
and
saying.
And it's got a proven better, you know, remission rate and all of these other benefits of it, sure.
But I'm not saying, but even then, there's a lot of the clinical studies around this stuff is incredibly dubious. And it also depends on the psychological and philosophical paradigm that you're approaching human psychology from as well. Like, we watched that movie, the one with Michael Fassbender and Keira Knightley.
Oh, A Dangerous Method.
Yeah, A Dangerous Method, yeah. Which is about Carl Jung and his love affair with one of his patients who ended up becoming like a famous psychiatrist, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it was like, it's explored his relationship with Freud as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the primary tension between Jung and Freud was that Jung wanted to change human psychology. He wanted people to be able to go in
mm-hmm.
to their depths to find out what was wrong and how they could deal with it. Whereas mm-hmm. Freud was more interested in accepting human nature.
Managing it. Yeah.
That was what Freudian psychology was all about. And like for something like ketamine therapy, for instance, what ketamine does is it makes you dissociate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're somebody who suffers from depression or anxiety or whatever, dissociating and getting space away from your negative emotionality and ideation can help alleviate the symptoms because it gives you like distance and perspective and objectivity. But at the same time, teaching people that dissociation is the answer to depression is dangerous. It has to be done in a way that you're not reinforcing that kind of message because you can't be dissociating all the time.
That's why using a depressive like ketamine, I'm again dubious of, that. And you know,
and then when it comes to psychedelics as well, because like there's been a lot of research as well recently about psychedelics and antisocial behavior and whether or not psychedelics can be used to change the neurochemistry of people who have antisocial behavior or have personality disorders, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are psychopaths, sociopaths, or BPD, NPD, all of those different things. And whether through taking psychedelics, they can experience empathy and all of the things they lack that basically cause their antisocial personality patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, what the evidence seems to show so far is that there is little change. And I've always thought this because people are like, you know, psychedelics makes you a better person. I'm like, well, like all the fucking sociopaths in Silicon Valley are constantly tripping on ayahuasca. It's not as if they're having revelations about, like, it's not, you do have epiphanies and you do have revelations,
mm-hmm.
but it's not as if like those revelations are immediately actionable if you don't have like support and the inclination to actually put those things into being.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that like ubiquitous brain patterns that have been established over years can be changed by a few trips, I'm also quite skeptical about that as well. And the fact that it's sort of being lauded as like a cure-all to the problems of modernity and the human condition. Like I was reading Culture of Narcissism by Christopher Lash the other day, like rereading some parts of it. And he was talking about how in the 21st century now, the pathologies that are more common are things like borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, these sort of vague, abstract disorders of the character. Whereas in the 20th century, it was more neurosis, OCD, things like that, things mm-hmm. that were to
PTSD,
do with, yeah, PTSD, like, things that were to do with like a punishing superego.
Mm-hmm.
But now that the cultural mores that made people's superegos incredibly strict have kind of been thrown by the wayside, we're now seeing a bunch of character flaw issues emerge, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why they're throwing psychedelics at it is because they don't know how to manage anything that's not neurosis. They're still really confused about how to manage and also why there's been this shift towards disorders of the character.
Well,
I mean, psychedelics can help treat disorders of the character, but it's also dubious because trying to change someone's personality is dangerous, which is why Timothy Leary got in trouble.
Hey now, hey.
That's why he got in trouble.
I know you're on that side of the fence, but let me play the other side of the fence because I am a kind of a probably a believer in the experience and like...
I'm not on any side of the fence. I'm on the I see both sides of the fence
it.
Thing.
I don't put words in my mouth. No, no, no. I see value in it greatly for a lot of the stuff. And like, as you sort of said, ketamine is not. And the frustrating thing is when you read a lot of the people like Timothy Leary and all the other figures surrounding him, Richard Alpert, et cetera, that were like... or Ram Dass, as he then became known as, like, you know, that went and did a lot of this research, like, in the day, you do see a trend in the way people, extreme people respond to this kind of treatment that they were giving to people.
Mm.
And the way it got shut down was purely through culture, was through a... drugs are bad, everything around drugs is terrible, we're going to fucking brainwash everyone to make them think if you do psychedelics you'll lose your mind, mm-hmm. and fucking do all mm-hmm. of this stuff. And you had all of these Cold War fucking tensions and fucking war on drugs, yeah. and all this stuff fueling this complete ban on everything.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like in the 21st century, like, not that the war on drugs has ideologically failed.
Yeah.
Like, nobody buys that drugs obviously. Are completely bad for you anymore.
Obviously.
So...
but that doesn't change the sort
of... No, but so now people are kind of, like, slowly thinking about ways they can make weed medicinally kind of okay in other places other than America, and, like, you know, other ways that they can basically reverse some of the rules that were imposed purely on ideological terms because yeah. of the drug war.
Yeah.
And so now they're then now reapproaching all of this kind of psychedelic yeah. research that did show incredible promise mm-hmm. all the way up into the fucking 1960s, late 60s,
mm-hmm.
where it was being really academically looked at for mm-hmm. lots of stuff. And even like MDMA was, I think, like almost invented for the purpose of couples therapy.
But I have a problem with that, because as somebody who did a lot of Amandi in my fucking in my early 20s, like, there are times where I felt so loved up, so fucking connected to the people around me, most of whom I'm not still fucking friends with, you know?
Of course.
It's a chemical effect. Like, not just that. Like, you know, I would have fucking epiphanies, dude. I would have fucking straight up epiphanies about peace and love. But I, like, you know, it's like in that moment, yeah. And of course there are certain lessons you can take out of, but in terms of it changing my personality, it may have given me some perspective or some relief from certain thought patterns that I had, but it wasn't like a cure-all. And the fact that it's sort of being sold as like a potential cure to certain psychological maladies, I don't think it's ethical to claim that.
Well, that's what it's shown to do.
Well, not necessarily, because a lot of the studies are,
you know,
dubious. I'm not saying that there haven't been studies that show that it creates improvement in certain things, but in terms of like long-term cure, it's not that, and I don't think it's ethical to frame it in that way.
No, long-term cure, I think, is you following the kind of pathways that do become then open to you through those experiences, and maybe it's not something that is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's something that you do regularly, like a dentist, where you go every fucking
yeah,
6 months
I'm not,
to a year
no, you're
to
talking,
the fucking
you're talking about
guy,
it as if
right?
I'm against, like, psychedelic therapy or as if I don't think it has any benefits. I do. I've experienced benefits from using drugs that wouldn't necessarily be considered legal. So I'm not at all against it. But what I'm against is like the current paradigm and
yeah.
it being thrown into the current paradigm, the current
yeah.
ethos, the profit-driven ethos.
Yeah, well, and not even just that. Like, do you know where's the last place on the fucking planet that I want to take psychedelic drugs?
In a fucking clinical, weird
yeah,
doctor's hospital office
yeah, dude.
Type of situation.
With weird fucking beepy machines.
And that's the one in
like,
London that we saw literally looks like some kind of members-only club in
yeah,
Soho.
I
would have such a terrible time if I took acid in somewhere that looks like a fucking Batman lair.
That's one thing that I think...
like a mid-century modern Batman lair.
That's one thing all the psychedelic 60s researchers got 100% right. It was like, we need some tapestries with like Buddha and like positive vibes, and
oh
like
my God.
We're gonna get a pianist, and like, you know, it's gonna be, and there's gonna be cushions. It's gonna feel like some sort of Arabian Nights.
Not
like
just
lounge
that, but I'm for the use of psychedelic
energy,
therapy, but I think that it doesn't need to be necessarily clinical. I think that it should be a communal thing, but because we don't have communal rights, we also don't have any sort of communal positions that are in charge of this domain of life anymore. We're now sort of outsourcing it to and medicalizing it in a way that I think strips it of its like actual medicinal potential. And not just that, I'm also skeptical because we are, it's like a Brave New World thing. It's Soma. It's like an oblivion seeking exercise. Like, look at the way that ketamine is sort of being touted. Dissociation. Like, we've been watching Evangelion recently. I finally gave in and like watched the whole thing. The anime ban has been lifted. And I actually really fucking loved it. I thought it was great.
I know you would have, which is why I was trying to get you to watch it. I was super into it.
The guy who created it clearly read Carl Jung's Red Book because the parallels are just like uncanny and crazy. But yeah, I'm very into it. It's very up my street. But yeah, like it kind of reminded me of the whole human instrumentality thing, and the idea of seeking oblivion in order to avoid pain. And suffering.
I don't think that's what mushrooms and acid are.
No, but I'm saying in our current world where people are super alienated and where we have a system that doesn't really want to deal with the causes and the roots of people's alienation, but that just wants to sort of throw any solution it can find. Like technology is like basically almost a technology is aiding in this like human instrumentality. And I feel like psychedelics would too. In the current state that we're in.
It's just, I've seen the kind of really gaudy culture that surrounds legal weed now in California.
Yeah.
And it would kind of suck for that to happen to...
Consumerist shamanism.
Yeah, like that would kind of suck. And it sucks that it's even happened with weed, but it would suck for it to happen with mushrooms and LSD as well.
But not just that, I think that in the current environment we're in, like we see the signs of alienation everywhere we look. There are school shooters, there's all kinds of things. Suicide rate is high. You know, people are, you know, really feeling the weight of the world as it currently exists. And this current system, the current order, the current power centers that exist don't want to deal with the sources of people's alienation. And they're going to throw whatever they can at it, including psychedelics, and not in a way that like actually like helps people, but in a way that sort of pacifies and numbs them out, which is the reason why like part of me is skeptical about things like ketamine being used to treat depression. I guess in a very sort of responsible clinical setting, it would be kind of emphasized that this dissociation process is to gain perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for a sense of relief.
Well, that's
but you know that there'll be clinics out there that are doing it just to give people that. And then when you even talk about, like, there was a Vice documentary not too long ago with a guy who was doing ketamine therapy, and he had had some traumatic experiences in his early childhood that made life like unbearable for him, and it was helping. But when he described how the ketamine therapy was helping him, he said it was helping him because he was dissociating, and for those few hours a week or whatever, he was able to kind of dissociate completely. And he felt like that was a sense of relief. And it's like, okay, I'm just like an armchair idiot. Who am I to say that this guy shouldn't get the relief that he's seeking through this therapy that he's doing? But then again, part of me is like skeptical. Should we be encouraging people who are in pain to dissociate, you know? Considering that dissociative disorders are part of like post-traumatic stress and things like that. Like when somebody dissociates, it's not like a good thing is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but then if someone's constantly in pain, you can't all of those sorts of things. Why wouldn't you allow them to do that?
I don't know, because it sort of feels kind of death drivey to me, which is why I brought up Evangelion. It feels like it feels like accepting human instrumentality, if you get what I mean.
Maybe pain
is part of life.
Maybe with
and trying to use drugs to escape it isn't a good idea.
No, of course, but I think I don't know. I can't speak from a first person about ketamine, because I've never used it to the extent where it's given me the kind of effects that these people are getting from it.
Yeah, because they take it intravenously, which is the reason why.
Yeah,
like,
and they've probably got some proper stuff. Yeah, and all the rest
taking
of
ketamine as a party drug is different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I can't speak honestly around what that experience is like, but I think that the intelligent use of drugs is like exactly basically the same attitude that someone like Michael Pollan is pursuing in the spirit of Timothy Leary, whether he likes it or not. Like not seeing drugs through this cultured lens of these are bad things and you shouldn't use these things to help or assist you to get to a place of clarity or any of these things is to your detriment, because they are there and they're available for you to
use.
But
I don't, that's not the argument that I'm making. I'm not talking about like whether or not psychedelics are useful.
No, it's
or whether
intelligent
or not
use of drugs. And if someone's suffering and they want to take drugs to alleviate that suffering, I don't see that as, especially in something as extreme as what you described.
But I'm talking about in this current day and age, considering the epidemic of alienation and anime and ennui that we have, and the fact that we have a system that's like purely motivated by profit and not necessarily human gain or human well-being, sorry, which is what I'm trying to say. The mixture of those things plus like trying to add psychedelics into the mix is what I'm skeptical about. Not the actual psychedelics themselves. Because that, if you're administering psychedelics, which have the capacity to have all kinds of unpredictable effects to someone, you have to make sure you're doing it with the correct ethos.
Of course.
And if you're doing it with the ethos of escapism or promising people to solve that, you're going to damage people. And that's what things like MKUltra did. That's what got Timothy Leary in trouble when he was sort of trying to investigate the idea of personality change, or how you could sort of shift someone's personality using psychedelic drugs. There are lots of ethical issues. And that's the reason why I'm skeptical, because it seems as if those ethical issues are never discussed, and all that's discussed is the benefits.
It's only unethical if someone isn't a willing participant.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that especially when we're talking about medical stuff, like I don't think that it's like, oh, should somebody be able to go to a plastic surgeon and have them turn them into a dolphin?
Well, no, but it's like you go to someone
and
say,
like, oh, they're willing, they're consenting adults.
But a more realistic thing, is to say like, oh, I'm suffering from this terminal illness.
I'm not talking about extreme cases like with terminal illness and stuff like that, because psychedelic therapy has been shown to help people. Like, I'm talking specifically about the general kind of mental health issues we see in society today, like personality disorders, anxiety, depression.
Yeah, and if someone's like, I know I've got BPD and I want to do these psilocybin therapy sessions to try and get rid of my BPD, and it's going to take two months, and I do a session
every
week.
But the idea that it could even get rid of your BPD is also not provable. There's no proven claim that psychedelics can cure personality disorders. Like, you could say, I have a personality disorder and I've taken psychedelics and it's helped me come to terms with it, or it's helped me notice it more. But to say that it can cure something that is, your personality is who you are, that a personality disorder is not something that can be cured.
But what,
which is the reason
the way,
why I think
the way
that
scientifically they
it
describe,
can be managed, but it's not something that can be cured.
The way they describe scientifically this process working is akin to like defragging a computer. So you sort of have all these folders of your brain, for example, your brain being this computer, that have all of this old cache, all of this old data, all of this stuff and viruses and bad habits and things that you've picked up. And the psychedelic experience puts your brain in a malleable place where you can essentially flush out those things and put new data in.
Well, like, it's interesting because, like, again, going back to the whole Freud-Jung thing, Jung's idea was, like, by traversing the depths, one can sort of transform the personality and sort of, you know, come to one's higher self. Whereas Freud was like, and this is obviously like a crude reading and understanding of it, but he was more of the mind that the lower aspects of human nature are just what they are. Mm-hmm. And we have to sort of manage them. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that you can really do about it. And these neuroses that arise from repressed this and that can be managed through certain methods or whatever.
And I think as well, for things like alienation, I think that psilocybin and stuff could still prove to be quite
I'm not making the argument. I'm not making the argument that there aren't benefits when it comes to psychedelics. Like, I've said it 10 times. Like, yeah, there are benefits when it comes to psychedelics. But how they're administered and the ethos behind the society that you're in matters. And, like, yeah, I feel like that's the reason why there's, like, constraints when it comes to this specific issue.
Yeah, I think also the arrogance of a lot of them where they, we need to do a lot more stuff to prove that these have like any kind of medicinal benefit when it comes to like opening up the laws to do research and clinical trials on psilocybin and LSD and stuff. Just like, bro, you do have like 20 years of it already from like the fifth, from the mid 50s. Well, if you have 15 years of it from the mid 50s to the late 60s.
There's even more, even previous, like there's more.
Well, with acid specifically anyway, you've got at least 15 years. And then with, actually, I don't think you do have that much longer with psilocybin for like proper medicinal scientific research. I don't think you really.
In terms of research that would be considered like viable by today's standards, no, there's not that much. But in terms of like prolonged like observation historically, there's quite a bit in terms of like knowledge about psychedelics and their effects, and
of course
like even ergot and stuff, fascinating stories about ergot. It's a fungus that grows on
wheat,
and that's the thing that LSD is even synthesized from in the first place. And you know, loads of mystical experiences throughout history, people have sort of linked them to ergot poisoning and things like that. Like, psychedelics have been with us for a very long time. So I'm not, like I keep saying a million times, I'm not against their use whatsoever. I'm just skeptical about like the current climate plus like dissociation from reality. Like, all of us are Shinji in the Eva deciding whether or not we want to like deal with reality and face it for what it is, or like dissociate in order to escape from pain. And I feel like so much of what's presented to us these days in culture, whether it be like internet obsession, being on TikTok constantly, binge watching content, this and that, plus everything is about escapism. And I can definitely see psychedelics contributing to that kind of.
It's kind of escapism, but I also like, there's this very, very, very hippy dippy quote from Bill Hicks that I want to give you. Just as like, it's kind of escapism as well, but also the kind of realizations and things that you end up feeling through a mushroom trip aren't just escapism. So he has this great line that's like, I'm glad mushrooms are against the law, because I took them one time and you know what happened to me? I laid in a field of green grass for 4 hours going, my God, I love everything. Yeah, now if that isn't a hazard to our country, how are you going to justify arms dealing when we realize that we're all one?
I really wish that I had like your hippy dippy Sagittarius like optimism, your like golden retriever optimism, because like you say this, like fucking Jack Dorsey has done acid, Steve Jobs has done acid, like fucking, I'm pretty sure that like Mark Zuckerberg has probably dropped acid or DMT or whatever the fuck. Like, like it's even funny we're having this conversation because you're wearing the Alex Jones NASA t-shirt, the one he wore in the Joe Rogan episode.
Listen to me.
Yeah.
Mushrooms are good for you.
Well, no, he also has quite a skeptical view towards calls pharmakia as well.
You know what I remember?
Like all of this, people say, oh, mushrooms inherently makes you feel this connectedness to nature. It can do that, but it can also give you like a terrible time. Or
that terrible time is what Robert Anton Wilson describes as the Chapel Perilous. That is like a psychological moment that you traverse, that you must be equipped with all of the necessary like tools of the spirit to pass through.
But most people are not equipped to face their Chapel Perilous. And the thing is, most people either have a bad trip and it sort of traumatizes them, or the psychedelic trip just sort of bolsters their grandiosity. Like a lot of people who are...
That's why you follow the intelligent use of drugs.
Yeah.
You know.
But even then, it's so... What I'm saying is the effects are immeasurable.
If you know you're not ready, then you don't enter Chapel Perilous. Yeah. So like that's like kind of the, and like hopefully you have that choice, right?
But
like,
I'm not talking about bad trips. I'm talking about the quote you just gave, which was the idea that oh, if everybody took psychedelics, then it would disrupt the system because we would all be lovey-dovey. That's bullshit. Like all the fucking sociopathic CEOs that like rule over us have taken fucking psychedelics.
Yes,
like, I think you think that everybody who's like in a suit is like somebody who's a square, which isn't true, dude. Like most of the people who were like against drugs or and had that propaganda are either very old or dead. Like most of the people who are in power now don't have like that lackadaisical.
Which is why the ideology of the war like on the drugs can't be like maintained because there's no one perpetuating
it. But our elites are doing and have always done psychedelics. So the idea that taking drugs makes you automatically a good nature loving tree hugging hippie is bullshit.
Not always done psychedelics.
Yeah, they have.
The president?
Yes, I'm talking even before. Like, what do you think the Mayan elites were fucking doing?
Yeah, the Mayans
doing?
And stuff, of course. But, like, dude...
Well, you think our elites weren't tripping balls? What, John Dee was, like, Queen Elizabeth's fucking right-hand man, and he was, like, a fucking wizard.
That's true. John Dee probably hooked Elizabeth up.
Yeah. Like, they've been on that shit for a long time. Like, elites have been on that shit for a long time. And even now, like, you hear about, like, fucking some Silicon Valley asshole going to take peyote at Joshua Tree. Well, like, they're all doing psychedelics. So this idea that it makes you this, like, tree-loving hippie is bullshit.
That was the thread that was weaved in a conspiracy thread, but also kind of, you know, all you know, if it smells and quacks like a duck and whatever the saying is, right? Like... There was this lady that came and approached Timothy Leary called Mary Pinkott Meyer, who was like basically having an affair with JFK. And she came to him with this proposition that you teach me how to run these LSD sessions the way that you do, and I'll teach all of the wives of these powerful men how to run these LSD sessions, and we'll change America for the good, and we'll kind of get rid of this Cold War kind of fear mentality that was going to be running the country if we don't do something about it kind of thing. Which is very admirable, like a nice, like naive, probably attitude to
incredibly
kind of
naive.
The
not admirable, you know. Naive, but that was like the weird optimism
and
of
she
the '60s.
She did acid sessions for JFK, but then she was like shot dead in the street, like so soon after he was assassinated.
It
as
wouldn't
well
surprise
like,
me. So this idea, yeah, again, this idea that it makes you a tree loving hippie is bullshit. Our elites take it. And the idea that it can significantly change your personality, like, without a lot of intention and chance working out and intense work, like, I don't think that that's true. Like, of course you can change someone's and shift someone's personality, like, with LSD. Like, that was what MK Ultra was about. But whether you can do it for, like, the better or have specific outcomes or even fully control the outcomes, that's stuff that we're all yet to know. And it's, like... dangerous. And especially now, because I brought up the Christopher Lash thing, because like especially now that like a lot of the pathologies that are emerging are personality and character based ones, it's kind of dangerous territory. Neurosis, the 20th century like neurosis stuff, like Woody Allen was kind of the culmination of that, like nervous disorders and like having a very punishing super ego that like creates a lot of shame and guilt and stuff that then manifests itself in like neurotic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That was like 20th century mental illness. And I guess that we kind of got a handle on it.
Well, you know,
but this new stuff is like,
one of the criticisms I heard you said was in the comments for one of our podcasts was that we don't provide solutions. So I'm going to try to provide you a solution for at least some of the aspects around some of the psychedelic stuff, which is probably fairly similar to some of the kind of weed stuff that was proposed before all of the crazy sorts of ways it translated in America went. But basically, so to get away from the neoliberal kind of like capitalist kind of marketized thing of it becoming this very bougie sort of like thing, and you get all these horrible shops and stuff.
To like a psychedelic clinic that looks like an Apple store,
yeah,
or
that
whatever.
Would be fucking hell. So not that.
And a bunch of bug men come out to greet you.
So we can escape that reality. What we have to do is basically like run... A thing that basically says that this stuff is legal if you have this license. And to get this license is kind of like a, not a driving license, but it's similar. So you're learning how to operate the fucking brain with these potentially mind-altering drugs. It's quite like a big thing. So you do this course that goes for 8 weeks or whatever that gives you all the details about probably just mushrooms, because that's something you can safely synthesize at home on your own. And so then you give everybody this great course, teach them how to do it, teach them about set and setting, teach them about all the good things to have a nice positive trip that's going to give you really nice affirmations and like good vibes. And then you teach them how, in the same course, you teach them how to grow their own mushrooms. And then everyone can go home that's qualified and grows their own mushrooms. And you can't sell mushrooms. You can't sell them still. So it's still
You're
illegal.
Not allowed to sell
no,
them.
No, it's still illegal to sell
oh
them.
Oh my God.
But you can do a course and you can learn about all this stuff and you can then grow them yourself and then have them at home for your personal use.
I don't think we need a psychedelic bureaucracy. Because we're reading Red Book right now in our book club, BT Dubs. If you want to join our book club, you can join us on Patreon. We are on episode 5, I believe. And it's been really fun. But like what I've learned so far from reading Red Book is that this process of psychological integration, the things that kind of equipped people for adulthood, like having a sense of who you are, not being aimless, you know, having a social role, being initiated into something, like that's all gone now. And, you know, at the beginning of Red Book, you sort of get an insight into Jung's early life in the sort of chapters that are written before the actual Red Book begins, and his career, and also the period in history in which he was born, and the time where he was working, and all of those different things. And like, you know, that specific period was kind of similar to ours in the sense that a similar spiritual malady haunted it. And it was also the time where the Industrial Revolution had started to make people more atomized and like alone. And I think Jung was one of the first. We have the digital revolution in our age, but like the Industrial Revolution, that this was like the culmination of when it had started to fully atomize people. And I think Jung was one of the first people to realize that spiritual initiation in the 21st century is a self-led, self-directed process. Because literally, there is no community to help you, unless you're lucky enough to have one. But the vast majority of us are socially disembedded people living transient lifestyles. And eventually, some of us will be lucky to settle, especially if you're around our age and you're like a city-dwelling person or whatever the fuck. There's no fucking community. You're a transient person. So your process of like initiation has to be self-directed. And I do kind of think that right now, because of how bad our institutions are, it has to be outside of institutions too. So I think if you are going to do anything consciousness altering, you have to sort of, it has to be a safely self-directed process, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's exactly what this course would give you.
I don't think that.
That's exactly what this course would give you.
That's my opinion. That's how I kind of see it.
So we arrive at the same conclusion. Just like, that's exactly what my course would give you.
Jake's,
course and you could then give yourself this session or whatever.
Well,
then,
are you saying it should be a private thing where random cranks are giving people psychedelic courses and mushroom kits to grow their own mushrooms?
Cranks. There would be like mycologists.
No, it should be like Postmates or like Uber Eats, but for psychedelics.
What? No, you did not.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about you go and do a fucking 2-month course somewhere and it teaches you about these fucking drugs.
And it's a private company that owns it.
No, maybe not. Maybe
a government program?
Yeah, a government program or something.
Oh, so you want... I don't know. I don't think that... I don't know.
But who's going to do it then? If it's not the government and then you go, oh, it's going to be private.
It should be... What I'm saying is it should be...
It should be
the community.
Like...
It should be the community, but there is no community. There's no commons. Like, back when people were experimenting with consciousness-expanding drugs, it was like a scene, a community of people.
If there was a community of people in any town in England, like, growing mushrooms and trying to teach the rest of the town how to do them and how to take them and how to grow them even, the police would come and fucking shut them down.
Of course,
So the point is you do have to have some amount of government and fucking laws and stuff. Yeah, because otherwise there's going to be people with fucking sticks that are going to beat you up for eating mushrooms.
No, but I'm saying in an ideal situation, it would be a community kind of like communal right, not something that necessarily needs institutional intervention.
Yeah.
But since we don't have that, I think that it has to be a self-directed process. And that's the reason why Carl Jung, like, people speculate that he wrote Red Book on mescaline. I don't think he took anything. But the reason why he like locked himself away for all that time and went into the depths in order to write Red Book is because he realized that like the process of individuation is self-directed, mm-hmm. and it's this lonely process that one has to traverse on mm-hmm. their own. And even if you are in a clinical setting, quote unquote, it's still a self journey.
Mm-hmm.
And even the drug itself is taking you into your own depths. Like it's still on yeah. you, which is the thing that I'm trying to say.
Exactly.
And the way that it's being touted and marketed is worrying to me, and I think slightly unethical.
And look, I don't think someone like Megan Fox is going to take ayahuasca and then come out the other
side.
That's
what I'm saying. She's been going on about it for the last, like, she's been like, yeah, me and my friend went to Bolivia and we were the shaman and he told us that we were twin flames and we drank each other's blood.
Yeah, okay.
Like, so she's like a BPD ho.
Yeah.
And it's not as if like doing psychedelics is like going to shift. Maybe it did. Maybe she had an epiphany, but how actionable those epiphanies are, you know, is questionable, and how committed she is to actually taking, or if she even had, because some people take psychedelics and it just bolsters their grandiosity.
Yeah.
So if they're a narcissistic person and they already have sort of grandiose fantasies and an inflated ego, when they trip, they just like, it just bolsters their grandiosity even more, and they start mm-hmm. to have even more delusions of grandeur and shit like that. So yeah. like You never know.
I agree. I wish it was more of like a community thing and it was these sort of initiations that you had throughout times in your life and stuff. But I also do think there's probably value. As you said, no one does this stuff. Well, some people do. Some people will take this stuff, have one experience and be changed for life. And there is substantial evidence for
that as
well.
Of course,
exactly
there are lots of people
well.
Who have like
so it's
been
not
alcoholics or heroin addicts and have taken ayahuasca.
The inventor
never...
even of alcohol, they've just reminded yeah. me of a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
The inventor of Alcoholics, or the founder, however you want to phrase it, of Alcoholics Anonymous, literally came through that realization from acid. Mm. Like he was, and that was even actually a part of the process for yeah. a long time until the fucking drug war and everything else. And he
but
has
there's
made
also
it completely...
a lot of shady history around and schizo conspiracies around AA as well. We could go into that in a whole other episode. We could talk about addiction in another episode, because I've always wanted to talk about addiction, because that's like something
but
I'm interested
again,
in.
An area where it has shown, actually, one of that was the original studies was on a lot of that stuff
yeah.
in the 60s
yeah.
and stuff. You had all these guys in the 50s, like alcoholism
yeah,
is like
course.
Fucking ruined me. And they were coming back from war with all of, you know, issues
of course.
And problems
I'm just,
and stuff.
I just want to be careful, because I feel like any sort of anyone who's being clinically responsible, I guess, isn't going to like evangelize the benefits of psychedelics in this sort of ecclesiastical way. They'll say, hey, we have this thing and it could have some benefits, it could have some changes, we're still kind of figuring out stuff about it and stuff. But it's not as if it's approached with that kind of attitude. It's approached with, we can cure alcoholism, we can cure
yeah.
depression, we well, can cure it. It just feels,
it depends how it's written about and the sort of culture surrounding it. Like there were,
but we have a terrible culture,
there,
which is what I'm saying.
There were literally articles of it being this very bougie, like upper class, like guys thing, where he would do acid and then have like fantastic clarity to, you know, conduct his business and whatever the next day after.
Yeah,
he's
there's
had this,
all
like,
kinds of accounts as well.
Like
from...
you would have whiskey and cigars. They yeah. were talking about having an evenings where you were doing psychedelic drugs.
Like there's
and
all kinds of
cigar.
There's all kinds of accounts from the 60s and stuff of like couples who were in a therapy where they were given like ecstasy. And they were like, oh, we opened up, we were intimate, we talked about all these problems, it saved our marriage, this, this, that. But then as soon as the trials were stopped that were being done, of course, there are like insights and epiphanies that they had during those experiences. But like, again, sustainability, actionability, long-term progress.
What I find amazing,
if somebody's
is that
in a
these...
bad relationship, if somebody's in a bad relationship, for instance, and there are like foundational problems with the relationship, you going to take ecstasy with that person in couples therapy for a few hours isn't going to like solve the problems. Maybe it may make you cry and open up and all of those different things. But even then, like, I don't think that it should require psychedelics.
that's very like,
Or have we just become
who are you to say what it should require?
No, but I'm saying, does it, have we become so like unable to express ourselves again? Evangelion shit.
A lot of people are like that. A lot of people aren't like you, I'm the opposite. A lot of people aren't like you, Angie, about everything
that I feel all the time.
Yeah, well, that's not how majority of people are. Majority of people have actually quite a hard time talking about their things that are quite emotional to them.
Yeah.
And even despite this sort of like fake culture of like, and they open and talk about mental health, talk about blah, blah, blah. Like no one really, you know, do you know
but
what I mean?
But the thing is, the psychological benefits of being the type of person who may struggle to open up and doing that naturally, overcoming that naturally instead of like having it chemically induced. Like having it chemically induced, you've not done the work that it takes for you to get to that state of elatedness.
No,
and like as somebody who likes to experiment with states of consciousness and has been doing it for years, I can get to certain states through meditation and other practices that I can get through drugs through. It just takes longer and it takes more discipline.
Yeah, and in
That process of like discipline makes it more rewarding when you actually reach that state. It's like when I was complaining about dildos earlier and stuff. Like, of course you can diddle yourself to completion with a dildo.
I think that's really
and like avoid the hassle of like having to please somebody by having sex. But it's more rewarding to have sex and achieve orgasm with a person.
It's the wrong way of looking at it.
How?
It's more like you can let this cut naturally heal, because it will naturally heal through its own methods, or you can rub some stuff on it that's going to make it go faster.
I mean, how do we know that it accelerates the process?
Because that's what the fucking results of the... That's, I mean, why people are saying that it does have these effects.
In certain cases, it has accelerated the process. In certain cases, it hasn't. Like, you have to present the evidence, like, honestly.
Of course. But if you were looking at something like, you know, I think the amount of success rate with talk therapy is like a third.
Mm.
And which is what spurs someone like Timothy Leary in the first place to be like, there has to be something more successful than this. I'm failing two-thirds of my patients, it feels to the point where I'm just lying to people that I'm going to be able to do anything with them. But there's been a plethora of other types of therapy that have been developed
since like the time of Timothy Leary, including things like cognitive behavioral therapy and lots of other things.
But still, even with those things, I think the results that you get from psychedelic therapy are somewhere in the region of 70 to 75% betterment.
I'd be interested to see the numbers.
It was mentioned in that article. It said 71%.
Yeah.
Betterment, and that's from curing of addictions and all the sorts of things that they're doing. That's just with ketamine. It's even higher when you look at the earlier studies with mushrooms when it was actually they were able to do them.
Well, like I said, I'm not skeptical about the fact that like it could help. I just don't. I'm skeptical about the societal context that like this is now being pushed in.
And I think,
and just like the levels of alienation that we have as a society, and also the fact that I don't think that corporations or our governments give a shit about like dealing with the sources of our alienation. They just want us to feel better and to have experience. Like, we're an experience chasing culture, even like spiritually, like the whole new age shift in culture or whatever. Like, before, spirituality was about devotion and about like, you know, your... Sorry, just lighting a joint. Yeah, spirituality was about your devotion and like your allegiance to a specific tradition or whatever the fuck. But now it's about sensation and experience, if you know what I mean. Even like Christianity in that sense, like the evangelical churches, like I grew up in a Pentecostal environment, and part of the sell of that was like direct experience or... feelings of elation and epiphanies and things like that, and like, you know, they roll around on the floor and all of that stuff or whatever. Spirituality and the spiritual impulse is more about experience and sensation. Even in cults, like we watched that Rajneesh Param one, and there was that scene where they were all like shaking and screaming their traumas out or whatever the fuck. And I feel like, again, the psychedelic revolution 2.0 is sort of a continuation of that ethos, where people think that psychological insight has to come from these otherworldly like experiences and sensations, when a lot of the epiphanies that I've had in my life that have changed me, yes, some of them have been in like moments of like crazy trips, but a lot of them are just like bracing moments of lucidity.
No, but it's also about the way.
It's also like, about, it's not as if psychological development is impossible without drugs.
But you've just hit the nail on the head though. Like it's how your brain can be open to perceiving ideas, even about yourself.
Yeah.
And if yourself, you're there like, yeah, I know that I need to be more disciplined and I got to do this. And yeah. Like, you know, I need to buckle down. I really do.
Yeah.
I know that in my heart and I'm going to try my best. Like you're doing that in a sober state of mind. Maybe you'll do it. Maybe you won't. But you've made that commitment to yourself. If you're a religious person and you take a drug that literally makes you think that God is telling you that you need to be more disciplined and you, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of effect is going to fucking stay with you far longer than you just knowing yourself in your conscious mind and yes, this is all well and good.
That, like,
it takes being put into the fucking stratosphere and speaking with God for some people to then go, I get the message now. I've heard it from my next door neighbor that complains about how fucking tardy I am or fucking whatever the excuses. I've heard it from all these different people in my life. But it doesn't matter. Now I've been fucking elevated to literally the fucking heavens and I've been bellowed this by fucking God in my ears.
You've had the Shinji. You've had the Shinji experience. You've like shot up in the Ava and now you're ready to have your epiphany. I don't know. I don't know.
A lot
think
of
that
people
life,
can't get there.
I don't think
their,
so.
In their spiritual context, in their communal context, because that's been completely eroded. So the use of these drugs allows them to get to the point where they will receive these positive messages that are for the betterment of them, either from their subconscious and themselves, or just through what they've fucking heard, their feedback that they're not taking in a fucking, in a conscious, sober fucking state of mind.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that, I think, again, like a lot of the moments that I've had that have been integral for my personal development have been bracing moments of reality. And the reason that I was open to those realizations usually was because of intense distress. So once I reached this sort of breaking point of intense distress, then I'm like, oh shit, like I have to accept this lesson, or I have to acknowledge this flaw, or I have to acknowledge this fault.
See, a lot of my ones I've encountered when being on drugs.
Well, you shouldn't need drugs to have things like self-aware. But like, you're saying, because you basically, what drugs does is it opens up your neural pathways. So rigid thought patterns and things like that you may have become like neuroplasticity is more like available. It's more available, meaning that you're more likely to be able to notice and change thought patterns or whatever. And people who have incredibly rigid issues like specific forms of neurosis or personality disorders, it may be easier and more malleable. Making the brain more malleable could facilitate in like some forms of change. But at the same time, you don't need drugs in order to achieve a state of neuroplasticity. There are other ways of doing it.
Not even just that. Like, I remember the first time I did mushrooms, I was like, in my first year of uni, I was in this shared place with a bunch of strangers that I really didn't get on with. And like, I was really depressed. I'd come from like being one of the top of my class to then still being kind of still within the top of my class. But I'm in top of my class with a bunch of people that had just done A-levels and had never been in a studio or never seen Pro Tools before.
Yeah.
I was just incredibly frustrated and felt like all of the I'd left this great job in Oxfordshire to come move to London and do all this stuff. I'd felt like I'd made the wrong decision in my life and I'd fucked up. And I was massively depressed. I was like, literally, I was having like suicidal thoughts at points and stuff. I was really fucking like down about my life.
Yeah.
And like, I remember literally having this fucking mushroom trip and just sitting there and realizing that like, I'm in control of how I feel about the fucking situation.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst, I could sit in my bed and meditate and I'm not the kind of, I'm already anxious. I'm already fidgety. I'm already, if I can't sit down and do
that. But it shouldn't be that way.
Then bang, Whoa, and it just flushed all of the fucking anxiety and shit out of my brain completely, to the point where, like, I was walking around like I was on cloud nine, like, for the fucking preceding months.
Yeah.
Months. And then, like, had summer break and all of this stuff.
But
and
it means that we've gotten to the point in society where people are too busy and too neurotic and too flawed in character to have those transcendental experiences without the intervention of, like, psychedelic drugs, which is sad in my opinion. And I realize it because my own neurosis and flaws of character get in the way of my spiritual practice constantly. Like, being able to maintain consistency is an issue for me sometimes. Also, in terms of meditation and things like that, I've been trying to do some Zen stuff lately, and it's really hard for me. And it's like, especially as somebody who has anxiety and anxiety disorder and OCD, my mind is like, has a mind of its own. That's basically it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult for me to control my thought patterns. And also the stimulation that we have in society, the constant incentives to remain distracted, the stress, not just that, like, as older I get, the more stress I have, the more anxieties I have, the more worries I have. It makes it more difficult to enter that transcendental state, which is the reason why I think people are, and we don't go to church. I realized, like, my mom, the reason she went to church all the time, even though I find it boring and tedious as a kid, is because she was able to enter that transcendental state and let go and experience, like, that psychedelic, because she was a Pentecostal, that sort of psychedelic one with the Lord feeling that helped her get through the week, helped her get through Monday, Tuesday, Friday, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Whereas now we have none of that. And also entering that transcendental state is more difficult because of all the neurosis we have and the flaws of character we have too. So that's why drugs are more appealing. But what I'm saying is, it's sad that that's the case. It's sad that we've gotten to the point in a society where we can't just do it naturally anymore.
I'll give you the, like, in my little stoner hippie boy culture, I would see, like, doing mushrooms to deal with built up anxiety and depression and all of that stuff, and to find clarity in your fucking life, as, like, and using, like, natural earth grown things as, like, a pretty natural way to actually deal with the process. It shouldn't be something that's, I think, that demonization of, like, oh, you're using drugs is, like, that's like a fucking, that's a culture thing, and you got to realize that that's like a fucking anti-drug culture thing.
Yeah,
I'm not anti-drugs in any real capacity. Like, intelligent use of drugs is fundamental to expanding your consciousness.
Think about neoliberal technocrats who have your exact same thought pattern and ethos. I'm not saying that yours comes from that kind of place, but there are people who are in positions of power who think the exact same thing that you think right now, under the current sort of incentive structure of our system.
Even Hitler thought what I thought. Intelligent use of drugs. He's there jacking himself with amphetamines to give great speeches and to fucking get Mussolini on side and shit. You've heard that story, right?
What?
Where he, like, when he was going into this meeting with Mussolini, and Mussolini was literally, like, going to be, this was the meeting where he was going to be like, hey man, I'm pulling out of this. This is too much. We're done. And Hitler fucking went in, jacked the fuck up on amphetamines, and just came into the room fucking, like, screaming and just already ranting.
Oh,
there was, like,
God.
Not even a moment for, like, I think 2 hours or something where Mussolini could even get a word in. Hitler is just fucking going and, like, ranting and going on about the power of the Third Reich and, like, all of this crazy shit. And to the point where Mussolini is kind of either talked into or bullied or shouted at to just and just didn't say he was going to quit, and just he carried on. I feel like that. And so, you know, even, yeah, the Nazis and stuff would approve of it. I'm not saying that this is ideology of the Nazis and blah, 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 but, like, you know. Intelligent use of drugs, I think, is not a terrible philosophy, despite of the bad people
but
that have used
I'm
it.
I'm not
in the
saying
past.
It's not. It's a platitude, because it can be applied to many different philosophies. Like, the place you're coming from, like, your hippie boy Sagittarius, whatever, is different from, let's say, the, you know, heads of pharmaceutical industries or technology industries.
Yeah, because they want to sell you brain pills and they want to sell you
pills
for everything.
That's what I'm saying. And
so
the idea
of
augmenting the human experience because, our biological nature is too flawed to deal with the new demands of the current order. Neuralink. I mean, technology is also kind of blending itself into this like psychedelic realm. The metaverse, all of these different things that are sort of being touted. And I do see it as us embracing human instrumentality. I think that we're making the wrong decision. I think we're Shinji and that we're so engulfed in alienation and pain and loneliness and separation, and there's no community. And the process of self-initiation on one's own appears too onerous for most people. So most people are just like, fuck it, let's turn into the goo.
I got two more points about this and then we can wrap it up.
Okay.
First point is that I think even the very experience of a hallucination through drugs that is very vivid and powerful, whether it's good or bad, is a thing that people should experience regardless. Because for me, and this is going to sound silly, but this wasn't even mushrooms or acid or anything kind of where you're expecting to get this kind of revelation from. This was when I was doing 40X Salvia. And I've told this story before, when everything turned into Tron and I thought the programs were chasing me. It was very vivid, like very, very, very vivid. But even like coming out of that, I would only smoked weed up until then. And like just coming out of that, like that wasn't like a, oh, reality's not real kind of like Matrix sort of realization. But it is a reality is malleable. It's completely fucking malleable. So like what is currently here is not fixed. It's like, and that's just like as above, so below kind of principle, right?
Yeah.
So like, and even like similar ethos of like David Graeber of like, just as easy as everything is.
Yeah.
You have this tiny little thing that enters into your brain and everything all of a sudden very much isn't.
Yeah.
It's like something completely, completely else.
Yeah.
And even your perception of the fixed reality can apply it in the very same way.
Massively, massively.
And then the other thing that is a bit of a schizo one, but I'll end you on this one, which is a bit of fun. It's a bit, just a bit of fun. This isn't something I believe, but just an idea I had the other day. Because I was watching all these, you know, things about acid and Timothy Leary and when acid, we were watching that thing of when acid was invented with Albert Hofmann in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And it was in like, whatever, like 1943 or something like, it was the same, he said it was the same year that the atom bomb was invented. And like my other schizo side of my brain, which is like very fascinated in aliens and things like that. Also like, you know, part of the mythology, right, of aliens and 20th century alien visitation especially is that there's been a lot more since the atom bomb because it sent off this wave out into space and they realized we have this kind of power and technology and they don't want us to kill ourselves.
Twin Peaks style.
Yeah. But then him having this crazy fucking acid trip and basically being the first human to have that kind of level of fucking like mind-altering trip. Like all the other kind of drugs up until then, I don't think could have done as a powerful a job as the dosage that he did, as well as also just the drug of acid itself.
Just even the visuals of the idea of him riding through, what city was it again? Somewhere in Switzerland.
Yeah.
On his bicycle, tripping balls on acid for the first time. You're the first human being in history to ever take LSD. And you don't know what the fuck is happening to your brain. And
it's
like,
crazy.
Just imagining it is just like, oh.
But the... Yeah, anyway, that's a whole other discussion. Whole other and we're trying to wrap this up, so I won't go into Albert Hofmann and what he talks about LSD and the effects of that, because that's also someone you should probably read about if you want to think about how this is going to affect you as a person and the attitude towards it as a drug and all that stuff. Anyway, he described acid as the atomic bomb of consciousness and of the brain. And so, like, my idea is maybe that it's not the nuclear bomb that fucking brought the aliens here. It's actually... the mind bomb, the consciousness bomb, and like us sort of then like constantly now being into this other realm and like all of these sort of like conscious, you know, probably changes you're having with reality, because that's and then quantum mechanics and all of that stuff comes into it, right? They talk about like Karanch and these places where this is going to get very schizo, I know, I'm fully aware of that, but like, these places where they see very paranormal things, how observation and like all of those quantum mechanics laws affect that kind of thing. And so consciousness has an interplay with these paranormal events. And so maybe that is part of this alien equation, is this kind of, is consciousness.
So like you're saying when acid was invented, is there a correlation between that and like more UFO sightings or something?
Yeah, that was the bomb. So like this in the same
principle. But is there like a provable correlation between...
Well, that's what all the ufologists say, isn't it? That we've had a lot more visitations post
the bomb
than we did before.
But you think they're wrong about the bomb and you think it was LSD?
Yeah.
Have they visited you yet?
What?
The aliens.
No, I've only seen that one in the sky that I told you about. I've only seen
Look
that one
at you
in, the sky.
In your fucking NASA t-shirt.
Listen to me!
Going schizo on a run. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I really want to see that new documentary, the Alex's War one.
Oh yeah, we can do a review of that for Mickey, a bonus episode or something.
We should do a review of Evangelion for a bonus episode too.
Yeah, we can do.
Because I actually really want to talk about it more because I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I have like a lot of thoughts and I'm really surprised that I liked it. But just because I liked Evangelion, don't feel free to recommend me any more anime. They don't care. I'm not about it.
Evangelion just gives me such a big art boner.
Yeah, like, massively. It's gorgeous.
Like 90s style anime that's in a similar vein of like Akira or something. Mm. Probably a lot less budget than Akira, but like, oh my God, it's just so beautiful.
It's so good. And you can get access to our bonus episodes on our Patreon, and you can also help support the podcast. And you can join our book club if you like any of what we've been talking about today. We're reading Red Book by Carl Jung, and you can catch up on the episodes you've missed on our Patreon. Thank you guys so much for listening to this Psychedelic Revolution episode, and we'll catch you next week with something fresh. Goodbye!